John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us on the Venue Kings hotline is Brady Henderson from ESPN.com. Rookie minicamp is starting tomorrow. And, of course, 9 draft choices, about 14 undrafted players. I don't know, what things are you looking forward to, Brady, from what you want to see of the minicamp?
Yeah, John, you know, I guess there's only so much you can evaluate just because it is, you know, a very controlled setting. There's no veterans. There's no pads, usually. So I guess you're just kind of looking for the eye test, which players pass the eye test. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Shaquem Griffin's speed and how that looks in person. You know, we've seen it all on TV in the bowl games and everything, but I'm just looking to see how that looks in person, that 4.38 speed that he ran at the combine. That's one thing. Also looking just to see how Rashad Penny looks, you know, how he looks running the ball. Again, you know, there's only so much you can evaluate when these guys aren't hitting. It's kind of just, you know, kind of like a glorified workout out there. But, yeah, those are probably a couple of things that I'm looking forward to seeing. Also, Rasheem Green, their third-round pick, just seeing kind of how that size looks. Of course, they want to move him inside in passing situations. So just kind of wondering what those guys look like.
No question. That's what I think is going to be so interesting. Yeah, because, again, it's – and I guess you've seen all the negative reviews of this draft. You know, I don't know. How did you look at the way this draft went for this team?
Yeah, you know, I understand some of the complaints about the draft, you know, taking a running back in the first round. I get that. I think ideally, you know, you would have liked the Seahawks to fill their most pressing needs with their, you know, earliest picks, but – the fact of the matter is it doesn't always work out that way. I mean, going into the draft, you probably would have thought that cornerback was their biggest need, maybe offensive line as well. You know, the fact of the matter is they just didn't really like the first-round cornerback. Jaire Alexander, you know, too small really for what they like in outside cornerback. Mike Hughes, I think, you know, you saw the reason why he slipped all the way to the late first round. There was some off-the-field issues. I think the Seahawks, you know, shared the same concerns as a lot of teams did there. And then Josh Jackson, who went to the second round. I think the Seahawks just didn't really view him as really a guy worthy of taking at that spot in the first round. And I think it was the same with offensive linemen. The guys who were there just really, they didn't feel like there was enough value to take them there. So, again, ideally, you know, you want to address your most pressing needs in those spots. It just, the board just doesn't always work out that way. And so I think what they did instead was, you know, they felt like they took the best players. And kind of along those lines with their first pick, Rashad Penny, I understand the sort of, you know, people not really liking the fact that you take a running back in the first round. Ideally, you would get that guy later. The fact is the Seahawks didn't have a second-round pick. And, you know, I think, I wonder if they shared a lot of the same concerns about Darius Geis as a lot of other teams did, because he fell all the way to, I think, pick number 49, despite being a guy that a lot of people thought would be taken, one of the, you know, maybe the second or third running back taken. So that fact, I think they realized that was going to push every other running back up on the draft board, and they just didn't have a second round pick. And, you know, they felt like, you know, they probably weren't going to have, you know, there's no way that he was going to last until the third round. So, I feel like, you know, they did address some of their needs, maybe not as early as a lot of people would have hoped, but sometimes that's just the way it works.
Yeah, but that's the interesting part, because, again, I still go back to, like, the 2011 draft, and, you know, obviously the emphasis was going to be on offense, you know, particularly early in their picks, you know, trying to take a running back and a blocking tight end. That was for the running game. But the defensive players that they took, you know, I mean, seemed to fit that pattern of, like, 2011, where, you know, maybe they may not be high on some boards, but, I mean, they got a safety they can convert to a cornerback that was 6'3 and has 34-inch arm length. You know, they were able to get a pass rusher in the third round with that trade down. I mean, they did check the boxes of what they tended to need.
Yeah, and I think we've learned over, you know, what is it, eight or nine drafts now from John Steiner and Pete Carroll that, you know, they have a different, you know, different specifications for players than a lot of teams do. And I mentioned Jaire Alexander, who was taken with, I think, Seattle's original pick, number 18 overall, if I'm not mistaken. That was the pick that they traded to the Green Bay Packers. Well, you know, for a lot of teams, that would be a no-brainer when you need cornerbacks as much as the Seahawks do, or at least as much as we thought they did before it was learned that they're bringing back Byron Maxwell. But the fact of the matter is Jaire Alexander is 5'10 and under 200 pounds, and that's just not a player that really fits what they want to do. A player that fits what they want to do is more so Trey Flowers, 6'3", you know, about 200 pounds, and I think Pete Carroll mentioned that he runs the 40 and 4.4 in that range, which is really good speed at that size. For him, I kind of view that pick similarly to Mike Tyson from last year. They drafted Mike Tyson in the sixth round out of Cincinnati, and it was kind of similar case of, him playing. He didn't really play cornerback full-time in college. He was, only played at part-time. He was more of a safety, so, a lot of what they saw him doing was projecting him to play cornerback, even though they hadn't seen a lot of it. And he kind of redshirted last year. I think that maybe Trey Flowers is kind of in for a similar season where he learns, kind of transition year for him. Doesn't really make a big impact, but, it's another cornerback in the pipeline, and we've seen, they really like to have those young guys ready to step up. If something happens, if a guy leaves in free agency, an injury situation, I think they wanted to have that cornerback pipeline stocks.
What any gauges are the 14 or so guys undrafted? Any interesting stories that I haven't had a chance to really look closely at the list to see? Have you had a chance to look at it at all?
Yeah, Taj Williams, a wide receiver from TCU, I know is one of the guys. He's coming in as an undrafted free agent as opposed to a tryout guy. And a lot, as you know, John, a lot of the names that you see on the list, they're sort of, they're billed as UDFAs, but a lot of times those are just tryout players who aren't really assured of anything beyond that rookie minicamp. So, but Taj Williams from TCU, he's got nice size, and I think that stands out to me because, it was clear from the Seahawks' interest, from the interest that they showed in receivers over the offseason, from Terrell Pryor to Jordy Nelson to Jerron Brown, who they ended up signing, is they wanted to get a big receiver in that offense. And it makes sense, right? When you lost a lot of size when Jimmy Graham left for the Green Bay Packers in free agency. So, and, Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, both guys under 6 feet. So it seemed like they wanted to add some size. They didn't take a receiver in the draft. And I wonder if Taj Williams is kind of one of those guys who they figured could fill that size void. I think he's going to have a chance to make the team. There's obviously a lot of guys they'll be competing with. Recent draft pick, Amara Darbo, David Moore, last year's seventh round pick. But he's a guy who I think could have a chance to make the team, especially since the Seahawks didn't take a receiver in the draft.
They signed Byron Maxwell back, and it creates an interesting decision for them because clearly he's good enough to be able to start. And, that means that you put him on the Richard Sherman side, or do you move Shaquille Griffin to the Richard Sherman side?
Boy, that's a good question. I wonder if they would just kind of keep things status quo just because you'd then be, as opposed to moving two people around, you would only, you would kind of be keeping things the same. Shaquille Griffin, I hope that's only the first time I do that or the last time I do that. But Shaquille Griffin played right cornerback for them last year. And when Byron Maxwell stepped in for Sherman, he was playing on the left side. So I would wonder if they just keep things the same there as opposed to switching both of them around. But I think Byron Maxwell, I think that was a really big deal for them just because he knows their system. He played well. I think he played better than a lot of people realized for them last year when he came back and ultimately replaced Sherman on the left side. So that was a pretty big deal for them. And I think that kind of took the pressure off of them to take a cornerback early in the draft, some guy who would be capable of stepping in. Instead, with Maxwell on board, he can come in and start. I think that allowed them to sort of focus more on a developmental guy, which they did with Trey Flowers.
Interesting. So we will be seeing you over the weekend, Brady. And as always, read Brady Henderson at ESPN.com. And thanks for joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline.
You bet, John. Anytime.
Okay, breaking news. Jerry DePoto just announced that Ichiro Suzuki is transitioning to the role of special assistant to the chairman. In a related move, they brought up Eric Adell from AAA Tacoma. So that means Ichiro is retiring, or I guess you could almost say he's retiring. His new role, he's going to be an active presence with the Major League Club, both at home and on the road. And so he now is going to work with the staff. Now, according to this, his new role precludes him from returning to the active roster in 2018. And so just like we were thinking, of course, this is a little different than the way I was thinking. I thought what was going to happen was, they either make an announcement that he was going to stay through Sunday and retire a Mariner in that game against the Angels. That would enable him to go against, Ohtani, which, of course, would have been great to see back in Japan and good to see overall. But Ichiro is stepping down. Suzuki, 3,089 career hits. it's 2,542 as a Mariner. And I guess the one thing I think that they wanted and he wanted, that he's retiring as a Mariner and he's going to still stay active. His role is going to be special assistant to the chairman. So Ichiro Suzuki, in breaking news, is now going to be stepping off the field and into the front office. Eric Goodell comes up from Tacoma to pitch. That's the big news right now. All right, coming up, we're going to make the great report card up. We will get the grades out coming up. And, of course, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Busy day today. And, of course, we continue along. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the John Clayton Show. And you know what would be great is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. It's time for the report card with the professor.
And each day the report card, we grade some of the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the dumb, the crazy, the wacky, the sane, all those things that are going on in sports. But also, we also want to, of course, go back and talk about the breaking news. Ichiro Suzuki is transitioning to the role of special assistant to the chairman, meaning that he is now done for the 2018 season and at the age of 44, presumably ending his baseball career. Now, again, I guess he still can come back and do it, but what he's going to be doing is working with the club, trying to work with the chairman and have a presence both now and around here, both home and on the road. So Ichiro is at least with the club right now. Most people thought that this move was going to be made here reasonably soon. I thought maybe as late as Sunday, but he's now done. He is off the active roster. Eric Goodell has come in, and no relation to Roger Goodell, by the way. He's coming up from AAA Tacoma to get another spot there in the bullpen. So Ichiro stepping back as a player at the age of 44, and I think now you can see what made some sense. You know, they sent down Heredia, Heredia in the sense that, okay, this bought some time for at least Ichiro to stay on the roster and retire on his own terms, or step down on his own terms, transition on his own terms, and now he was able to do it here at home. And so Ichiro, not in the lineup now for the rest of the year, presumably the rest of his career, and is now counting down to the Baseball Hall of Fame. We are getting the report card ready. And so, Maura, how do you grade this move by Ichiro?
I like it. I think that, you know, you thought at some point that the fans would be upset if Ichiro didn't stay on the roster, but then it seemed like they were pretty upset that Heredia, because he was doing better, was sent down. So I think this is kind of a way to make everyone happy. It's a win-win. Ichiro is still involved with the Mariners organization, but I think the younger, more talented player gets out there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So that is the move made. And of course, what do we have on the report card?
All right. First up, we have in the Mets game yesterday against the Braves, Yoenis Cespedes was wearing a pretty blinged out necklace. And when he slid into second, he broke it, showering diamonds all over the field.
Brian Snitker, the manager of the Braves, opted to keep the left-hander Minter in to face Cespedes. Oh, that's diamonds?
Oh, his chain. Those are the residue. Well, the cleanup is underway after Yoenis Cespedes' necklace exploded. As Drubal Cabrera, who has done everything for this team this year, now doing the housekeeping as well.
How crazy is that? And I don't know if you saw the pictures. I mean, he was furious. I mean, he picked a couple up and started throwing them on the ground, leaving the diamonds on the ground. I mean, I have to give him a D. First off, for having such bling out there in the field for risk like that, and then to make matters worse, to just leave it out there, leave all the diamonds out where his teammates had to go pick it up. I mean, it's like, hey, you're the one that, you know, decided to wear this bling, and you decided to keep it on, and then when it goes and doesn't go your way, you just have to pout and walk away from it, you know, throw a couple on the ground like that, you know, leaving a mess out there. I have to give him a D. That was just absolutely ridiculous.
Must be nice to be that rich that he's just letting other people pick him up. He didn't even really seem to, he was mad his necklace broke, but he didn't seem that worried about collecting the diamonds.
Just didn't seem to care. That's the crazy part about it. It's like, oh yeah, well, geez, I've lost all this and too bad.
They're in the dirt now. They're worthless.
Exactly. It's like, it's like, I don't want to pick up any dirty diamonds because that would be below my care. It's like, why would you want to wear something like that in a game like that.
Well, it's like Michael Crabtree.
Mm-hmm.
Talib's always snatching off his chain. I don't understand wearing stuff like that during a sporting event.
No, I just think that's just absolutely crazy. But again, I guess, you know, that's where it goes. But how mad was that, in the sense that, you know, he gets so furious at the way it went that he just has to just walk away from it. D for diamonds.
All right. Up next, we have L.A. Clippers guard Patrick Beverley's mom was on The Price is Right, and she ended up winning the showcase for $41,000 in two cars.
You had this Trip-O-Matic gas car and a Hyundai Elantra. They bid $22,000. Actual retail price, $26,593. You got a brand new car. $4,593. She won $41,643 in prizes, including two cars. Good for her.
Beverly tweeted, "Mom's won Price is Right. It's lit. Let me hold one of those cars, Mama."
Nice. Got to like that. So, I mean, what kind of car was it?
I think, was it a Hyundai Elantra?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have to kind of give that an A-minus because, again, just the chance to win, that's so nice. And it's such a nice way for it to happen. Again, you know, nice little reward for what was going on. So I kind of have to give that a very good grade.
It was fun. She was really excited.
That's great.
Even though I'm pretty sure Patrick Beverley could probably buy her
a Hyundai Elantra
pretty easily.
Yeah.
But she earned that on her own.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we have in the Jazz Rockets game last night, Rookie of the Year candidate Donovan Mitchell had an amazingly impressive dunk off of a rebound from his own missed shot.
Crossover, Mitchell into a reach.
No!
Wow. I mean, is that why he was a slam dunk competition winner?
Well, no doubt. I have to give that one a B+ because, I mean, that was just a sensational play in a very big game where, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, they felt like, hey, Houston, they were taking control over this. I mean, they really felt good about the way this is all coming together in the series, even though it's tied at 1-1. But I have to get and give it a B+.
Yeah, it was impressive. I've never quite seen anything exactly like that.
By the way, can Kevin Harlan be any better as an announcer? Is there anybody as an announcer that can just capture the excitement of a moment as well as he does?
No, that was a great call.
He's fantastic.
Yes.
He really is.
All right, last here. I saved this one for last, Professor, because I thought you might like it specifically. The Texas Rangers are offering a college scholarship for innovative baseball analytics. They will award a one-time educational scholarship of $5,000 to an eligible student who submits the best original formula or statistic to be used in a baseball operations context.
That sounds pretty good. You kind of like that. So, you know, what do we give that a B? Do we give it a B or do we cross it into an A? Just, you know, the chance to get those opportunities and do that. I mean, I think you have to kind of give good grades to something like that because, again, it's like a nice way to do it. I think that's the way of the world right now. You may not like analytics.
Promoting budding young professors
absolutely.
Such as yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they can get there and get the worksheets going, the databases and all that fun stuff. You got to kind of like that part of it.
All right, that's it for grades today, Professor.
Okay, and of course, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. And of course, the Mariners and A's play tonight at 7:10. Pre-game starts at 6. Coming up next, we are going to take your text questions. And of course, a lot of breaking news so far today. Bryce Petty looks like he's being released by the New York Jets. Ichiro is stepping down as a player, and he's going to be working in the front office, working with the chairman, trying to at least be home in a way. He's staying with the team, but he's not going to be able to play. So it looks like at the age of 44, his career is over. They're back to four men in the outfield. And you figured that they wanted to try to at least give him the chance to go out on his own terms. And he was able to do that. You know, we still have the talk of what's going on right now with the Mariners and Edwin Diaz pitching in a non-save situation, which tended to be a little bit controversial. So we continue along here and we'll take your text questions at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And, of course, it's time for your text questions on this busy day when Ichiro is retiring. At least, I guess, now one of the stories, Nora, you got to kind of go over this because, again, this is all breaking here just in the last 20 minutes, is now, is the way this works is Ichiro is, you know, not saying he's retired, but he's not going to be able to play the rest of the season because he's moved into a front office role. But is there now a way that when they open the season against Oakland in Japan that he can maybe play one more game? Is that what the story is?
Oh, I don't know. That's an interesting take on that, Professor. Hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, kind of wondering if that could be somewhere that could be the case. But again, it's kind of interesting to see that Ichiro is now going into the front office. He's not going to be able to play the rest of this season. And he does, you know, step down as a Mariner. But I'm wondering with the season opening next year in Japan, you know, is there a way for him to be able to do this? And again, I guess they're not using the word retire. Not mentioned whatsoever. That sure seems to be likely, but maybe there is a chance that he could do something next year over in Japan for one game. Kind of interesting. Okay.
That would be fun.
What is on the text questions?
The 425 wants to know, why can't Heredia play full time? He has good bat, decent speed, good arm.
Right now, they're so good right now. They feel so good about the outfield that not the chance. I mean, Haniger's been one of the best hitters in baseball. You saw last night they moved into number five in the lineup. That was something that I didn't think they were going to do, but Kyle Seager's been scruffling a little bit, struggling, and so they move him down to six and, you know, Haniger up to five, but, you know, Ben Gamel has done well, and D. Gordon has been fantastic. You know, leads the league in stolen bases. I mean, he's hitting so well, so, you know, Heredia, I mean, I think, you know, really did a good thing by being quiet, going down to the minor leagues. I think part of this had to do with Ichiro and, you know, giving him the chance to kind of, you know, get out of baseball on his own terms. And so with all the, they said it was all their, a string of 10 consecutive right-handed pitchers that they were facing. But I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, the fact that they knew that Ichiro was not going to be with the team as a player for much longer, that they wanted to do it the right way. And this way they did it the right way. But, you know, I guess when you have four outfielders that are playing as well as these guys, that's a good thing.
425 says, JC, what's your prediction for the six division games for the Seahawks and their overall record this year?
I'd say right now 4-2. I still think that you know, they have a chance to maybe sweep against Arizona. I think that I think they'll get one sweep, and if that's going to be the case, then I think 4-2 would be the division record right now. I mean, you know, it's going to be a tough one on the road against the Rams. It's going to be tougher going against the Niners, but I still think that they can get one sweep.
360 says, Professor, is the fifth man for our pitching rotation currently on the roster, either in the minors or maybe one of the relievers, or is this a situation where management is going to give it a few months and try to acquire a proven starter?
I think they're going to give it a few months, and I think that you know, Wade LeBlanc is going to, you know, take in the role right now, but you still have Ariel Miranda down in the minor leagues, and they can bring him up, and so you know, I think they can get through like that. But Ramirez out now for about a month, you know, that does put a little bit of strain on that. But I still think, you know, currently they have guys to get them through, but right now, you know, the trade stuff doesn't really get going heavy until you start to get to July.
509 says, yo, JC Penny, is Coach Carroll on a short leash with this rebuild? What's the time frame allowed for turning this team around?
Indefinite. I think that, you know, knowing it is a rebuild, I mean, you take the tack that it's like you win 9-10 games this year, everything's going to be fine, whether you make the playoffs or not make the playoffs. I mean, I think the realistic goal is to try to be a wild card and then get back into the mix. But I think that, you know, don't underestimate this team. And I think Pete Carroll can coach as long as he wants, because I think he's put himself in a position much like Bill Belichick to do the same.
509 says, hey, John, I heard you talking about the Seahawks undrafted invites to camp. Aside from the big TCU receiver, is there anyone else you are excited to see?
I haven't studied it as much. I'm kind of waiting for the weekend to be able to watch that. I'm not going to be able to go over there tomorrow, but I am going to be able to be there Saturday. And so I really want to study and take a good look at what's there. But, you know, there's always going to be intriguing guys. You know, one of the things I hope to get before going over Saturday is what they got for signing bonuses and that, because then you kind of get a judgment where they are.
360 wants to know, will Shaquem Griffin start a game this year?
I doubt it. I think that, again, maybe if K.J. Wright gets an injury, he might get an opportunity to do it. But then you wonder, did he use D.J. Alexander or somebody else? You know that Mingo's expected to be the strong side outside linebacker. I'd say right now odds are not good for Griffin being able to start.
206 says, Professor, where is the likely landing spot for Dez Bryant? Why hasn't anyone signed him?
Well, I think that they're not liking what they see, and I think that's kind of a growing thing. I know that the Cowboys are now kind of dissing him, which, of course, I'm sure he's probably upset about. But, you know, realizing that he's probably thinking he's going to make $7 million or so, I think everybody's gun-shy. I mean, he's now not a number one wide receiver. He's more of a number two wide receiver, and right now he's a wide receiver without a home. People have been slow, and there's been very, very little reaction to him.
970 says, John, here's my question. Do you think the Seahawks should have picked a quarterback with their draft? Don't you feel they would have been better off gambling on another lineman instead of this quarterback?
No, I think that there's no problem. I mean, you're talking about a seventh-round pick, and you're talking about somebody that you can cut and most likely bring back to the practice squad and, you know, kind of keep them around. And, you know, in the seventh round, it's kind of a grab bag anyway. So, you know, there's a quarterback that they have. He's 6'3". He's mobile. He's got, 4'6", 4'7", speed. So I think that they like that. I don't have any problem with them taking a quarterback in the seventh round. Where I would have had a problem if they would have done it, say, in the third round or the fourth round, where they really needed to fix better needs.
206 Eric wants to know, are the Mariners able to put Ichiro back on the active roster if they are in the playoff hunt late in the season?
I'd say no. No, in fact, I'd say that's probably not going to be the case. I think he's done for the 2018 season.
425 wants to know, any word on legalizing sports gambling?
No word yet. I think, did somebody say the next juncture can be maybe May the 10th, something like that? That might be around the time, but, you know, there was some flurry that there was going to be maybe what's one day last week. That did not happen, but I think in May we're going to get that ruling from the Supreme Court.
253 says, do the Seahawks cut a running back this season? If so, which one?
I'd say right now the one that could be in jeopardy is C.J. Procise. You know, he's going to be in his third year. I mean, you know, J.D. McKissick, I think, has, you know, done better than him. I mean, C.J. has more talent. But then you look at the talents right now of Rashard Penny, and he's able to do the same thing, catch out of the backfield, you know, be a powerful inside runner, have the 230-pound mass that, you know, can kind of hit the line of scrimmage. We'll see. But, you know, they've got plenty of options right now that you're able to get Penny, because Penny can be so versatile.
360 wants to know if the Seahawks rookie camp mini camp is open to the public.
No, it is not. It's open to the media, but not open to the public. I mean, the first time that you're going to be able to see anything will be in training camp, and training camp alone, along with the preseason games.
425 wants to know if you could see the Colts signing DeMarco Murray or C.J. Anderson.
I don't see that happening right now. I think that they're getting reasonably tight against the cap. I think they feel pretty good about their running back situation. You know, and again, it's like that's the thing that kind of caught them cold, is that you know, Alex Collins went there and did so well. So I don't necessarily think Baltimore is going to sign a veteran running back.
All right. The 360 wants to know what you think about the Seahawks running game heading into this season.
I think it could be pretty good. I think that you can see the commitment. You know, this offseason, they pick up a first-round running back. they brought in Mike Solari to try to give them a better, you know, a different type of run-blocking scheme. And, you know, I think that they bring in DJ Fluker, who's a good run blocker. I mean, he added 25 yards in the games that he played for the New York Giants and Solari to their running game when he was in there. So I think that you can see a good increase. I think now they have a good mix of young running backs. A first-round running back generates some excitement. I know Pro Football Focus thinks that Penny can get maybe 920-some yards this year. So I think you can see that there's no way it can't be as bad as it's been the last 2 years.
You just mentioned C.J. Procise. The 614 wants to know, what could the Hawks get back for trading Procise during the preseason?
My guess would probably be like a sixth-round pick, something like that. It's not going to be anything too great because, again, you know, like they cut Alex Collins last year. You know, when you start to get to this point, it's like you have to find somebody that would really want him. And, again, he's very talented. I mean, this guy, I mean, I know every time you hear Pete Carroll talk about him when he's not injured, he talks, you know, how exciting he is at the talent. So, I think you can get some value for him, but probably nothing better than a sixth.
253 wants to know if Rashad Penny could be compared to David Johnson.
Maybe. That could be a good comparison. I mean, because again, you know, it's a powerful inside running that makes David Johnson so good, and that's what Penny can do, and he can break tackles. Yeah, there might be some comparison to him.
We talked about him starting at linebacker, but the 720 wants to know if Shaquem Griffin could start on special teams this year.
Oh, absolutely. I think you can count him on special teams. I think that they want to get him on the field. They certainly like his tackling. I mean, you can see that he'll probably be on kickoff returns and punt coverage teams and kickoff coverage teams. No, I think you can definitely count him being on the active roster and on special teams.
All right, that's it for text today, Professor.
Okay, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we chat with Dave Crosby.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
You invest in people and you invest in leadership, and I think Ichiro has really brought that. And I know the performance certainly hasn't been on par with what Mariners fans may have become accustomed to during his first day. But, you know, he came in banged up. He had the calf issue. You know, he's done some really good things when given the opportunity to contribute to a team win. But he's done so much behind the scenes that has really helped us to develop a good clubhouse environment and I think a positive approach night in and night out to who we're playing.
And that's Jerry DePoto talking about Ichiro and I guess maybe kind of setting the stage for this transition that he's making, you know, getting off the baseball diamond and getting out of the outfield and going into some consulting type position with the team, working with the chairman. And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. So on an eventful day, is this kind of the way that you thought it would go with Ichiro? I think what they did is that, you know, they gave him time to see what would be the right way because you knew they weren't going to carry five outfielders. Heredia had done so well that, you know, they wanted to get him back. And so you get him back home during a homestand, and now you give him a chance to kind of go out on his own terms.
Well, he's not retired, so it's on the Mariners' terms. It's not on his terms. I'm sure if Ichiro were to talk about it, he'd want to keep playing because he's a ball player. But this is certainly no surprise. And if you ask me if this is the way I thought it would end, and if you'd said poorly, I would have said, yeah. I mean, look, the Mariners are doing everything they can do to make it look good. But Ichiro clearly didn't have it at the major league level anymore. And this was inevitable. Really, the moment Heredia was sent back down, you knew that this was going to be a temporary thing and that his clock was ticking a little bit. And unfortunately, most of the greats don't go out the way that they would like to. And Ichiro is no different in that respect. So we'll see what this role winds up being. But, you know, it doesn't take away from the terrific career he had, for sure.
Oh, no doubt. I thought what was going to happen, though, is that they make some announcement right before the Angels series that Sunday would be his last game, that, you know, they would come back and, you know, have him play against Ohtani and then have a big Ichiro celebration on Sunday. So at least the fans would be able to thank him for the many years and the many good things that he was able to bring.
Well, everyone's been able to do that on a couple of occasions. You know, when he left, when he came back last year with Miami and hit the home run. Opening day this year, so I don't really look at it as fans not having a chance to acknowledge Ichiro. They've had plenty of chances to acknowledge him, and they've acknowledged him most definitely. I mean, he got the loudest, longest standing ovation on opening day in front of a packed house, and that's, I'm sure, going to be fond in his memory bank moving forward. But again, I'm not so sure that he believes his career is over, even though he was hitting 205.
Now, do you kind of think that one of the things that they might do, because they made sure that they didn't mention the word retire in the announcement, is that with the season opening next year for the Mariners and the A's over in Japan, then maybe what you can do is that you can have like a one-game type of thing where he would come out and be over in Japan to be able to play? Could that be one reason that they would do this?
No, because his agent made it clear he's not retiring. If you read the long-form piece that ESPN did, he is not planning on retiring. He wants to play till he's 50. I think that he'll spend most of the time that he spends getting in shape, staying in shape, unless we hear him say differently, and that would be a departure, obviously. I think his agent is the one who made it clear that he's not retiring. Just taking on his quote was, he's taking on a different role for 2018. 2019 is has yet to evolve. So, I mean, he still wants to be a baseball player, even though all the signs are that he really can't be one anymore.
Mm-hmm. You know, but kind of interesting the way this all transpired. But you kind of sense this something was going to happen this weekend.
Oh yeah, There's no doubt on the timing, John. That this was the clock was ticking the minute Heredia was sent back down, and they said it's because we're facing nine lefties in 10 days. I mean, literally, I think we said on our show, and it would have been on the day this happened, April 22nd, that in 10 days they'll probably make a decision, and they did. I mean, almost exactly 10 days. Later. So, yeah, I agree with you that you knew this was coming, and certainly the key strikeout last night didn't help matters, but I don't think it makes any difference. I don't think if he had gotten if he delivered a game-winning base hit, I don't think it would have made any difference.
Now, how do you think this role is going to be for him now? Because he's going to be a consultant to the chairman and make road trips and be with the team home and away.
Well, John, as you know, that's about as general a phrase as you could possibly say, and I have no idea the impact that he's going to have one way or the other, to be perfectly honest. You're hearing his work ethic about DePoto talked about impacting younger players and veterans in the clubhouse. I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily been his style over the years. I mean, he used to, during his glory days with the Mariners, he traveled separately, had his own room, all that sort of stuff, so... I have no idea what that role will be, but it's the perfectly generic phrase to use. And, mm-hmm. And if he wants to be in the, clearly if he wants to be in the dugout and wants to be in the locker room, he can be. I think time will tell whether or not he will be.
Mm-hmm. But it is an interesting decision, no question about it.
It's from the Mariners' standpoint, it's kind of a classy decision. I mean, they could have just cut him loose and just designated him for assignment and said, it's all over with and thank you for your service and everything like that. And they elected not to do that. So I think from the Mariners' standpoint, I want to emphasize that this is a very classy move by them to not provide the embarrassing sort of your cut and have him out there trying to get back into the game, not to worry about it for a year. And I would imagine his contract continues on the same that it did. That he signed at the start of the year. So I think this is a classy move by a usually classy organization because the Mariners had under no obligation to do anything like this.
No doubt. On a different topic,
yeah.
Same sport, what was your reaction last night to the controversy, I guess you could call it, of putting Edwin Diaz in a situation, in a non-save situation, in a 2-2 tie top of the ninth that ends up being a 3-2 win for the Oakland A's, where normally you're going to see him out there just trying to close?
First off, I wouldn't have pulled Paxton. So, I mean, that obviously is a matter of opinion. And, he threw a lot of pitches, and you can justify it. I mean, you had Luis Severino pitching a complete game for the Yankees last night. Aces, can do that. And, Paxton had a chance to break the all-time strikeout record if he had struck out the side the last two innings. He looked like he was still throwing great through 97 miles per hour the last pitch he threw. So I would have left Paxton in number one. But I know that's Jim Moore of Danny Dave and Moore who kind of started this whole thing today. I completely agree with him, and I always have. I think the closers just simply don't seem to function well in non-safe situations. And you can argue that they should or that it shouldn't be a factor. The fact of the matter is, 9 times out of 10 it is. So I do not believe in using closers in non-closing situations. And I'm not sure that's why what happened, but... it obviously opens you up for that kind of criticism when it does happen, especially on a first pitch.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, it got a massive reaction. We were able to take two segments of calls, one way or another. The surprising part is, I still think it's okay because what I look at as a closer, the ninth inning is yours. The thing that I don't like is taking a closer as good as Diaz, that throws as hard as Diaz, and putting him out there for more than one inning. I think that almost gets you in a position where you risk the chance of getting him hurt.
They're both controversial takes, or both takes that people have, they're probably split 50-50 on. I'm more inclined to go with the ninth inning guy, too, but, you've seen there's examples. There's this kid, Josh Hader in Milwaukee, who's getting three inning saves now and is absolutely blowing people away. So I think it depends on the individual, but I definitely am of the opinion that it seems like to me, whether it's a different mentality or whatever it is, closers don't seem to have the same sort of oomph when it's not a save situation. And that was on display yesterday. But that was just, the whole thing about it overshadowing the great performance by Paxton was just that was the ultimate painful loss for the Mariners. It's the first time their bullpen has blown a game this year, which is why you can certainly justify the move to the pen when they made it. And obviously the criticism that happens when it doesn't work out. But the real story last night was James Paxton. That was a spectacular start, one of the best starts I've ever seen in a Mariner uniform by anyone. It was remindful of Randy Johnson for sure. And it's just the, moving forward, that's the biggest takeaway of the night, is that Paxton, you know, had the sort of game, and he'd been flirting with it, that you expect him to have. Now, you're not expecting 16 strikeouts every single game, but at least seven innings and a dominant performance. That's what an ace does, and that's what he was last night.
Yeah, and it's just a shame that he doesn't get the win out of that, because when you're pitching that well, I mean, again, those are such a rare moment. I don't know if you'll see a Mariner pitch as well as he did last night the rest of the season.
Very good point. I mean, and when you get inside, I think Matt Calkins wrote a piece on it in the Times. When you get inside the numbers and see that he only threw 25 balls, you know, during the game. I mean, he was throwing fastballs for strikes to everyone. I mean, it was one of those epic performances. And like I said, I was against the I would have left him. I would have sent him out there for the eighth inning for sure. And the way he was throwing, to see what he could do. But you can understand why they didn't do it. And unfortunately for the Mariners, it winds up being the most painful of defeats.
No doubt. So what's on Bob Gross and Tom today?
We're talking to John Schneider of your Seattle Seahawks at 1 o'clock. And then you're going to join us, aren't you?
Yeah, 2 o'clock I get serious today? Tomorrow. So moving the chains. So I'll be tied up all afternoon. So we will be chatting today at 2.
Sounds good.
Thank you. And, of course, we will be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.